You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. That's just the three of us, just us. Nobody new here, nobody we've been missing, certainly not Charlie Davies. Back in the building, Chuck D, what's up, man?
Oh, it feels good to be back. Happy New Year to all of you.
It's January 19th, Chuck. It's January 19th.
And yes, let's go. Let's go. MLS draft. I'm hyped.
Super draft. Put the super on the front of it. Come on, Charlie. You know this. MLS Super Draft 2021 is on Thursday. We, of course, are coming to you on Tuesday because Martin Luther King Jr. Day was Monday. So we hope you reflected on that day, learned something, tried to educate yourself, spoke to the people around you, maybe your kids, your family. Either way, Thursday we can now focus a little bit on soccer because all of these college players are going to have their dreams come true. Now, they got a lot to earn after those dreams come true, but at 2 p.m. Eastern on Thursday, the MLS Super Draft 2021 presented by Adidas. There are three rounds in 2021. We will stream the entirety of that first round to you on MLS platforms, talking Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the app, Pluto TV. Tune in there. I will be hosting this thing. We got Doyle. We got Charlie. Both those guys providing analysis. Devin Kerr with interviews. We have cameras with players on site, so you'll see the reactions. We will try to make this as normal as it possibly can be in the year 2021, which was a weird year. We're going to talk about Generation Adidas class so far. Just three names. We know that often changes. We're going to have the Charlie and Doyle mock draft 1 through 10 with a little bit of a trivia question to determine who gets the number one pick. So start, you know, combing through those memory banks, boys. And then there's not really much other news around MLS. It's like, it's strangely quiet. It's almost like it's infuriating. It's not like Jordan Morris might go on loan to Swansea City in the championship. Certainly, we don't have a new sporting director and head coach, maybe one of David Beckham's best friends in Miami. And definitely DC United didn't go to Belgium to get their next head coach. Oh, all of that happened. We have so much to talk about and no time to waste. Let's go right now. Tell me about this year, Charlie. I know you focus on college soccer in a lot of your professional endeavors with the ACC Network. What went on this season in college soccer? Because it was not normal, just like everything else.
Yeah, the ACC, I'm tremendously proud of the ACC, the athletes coming together to play out this season. Everyone was safe for the most part. They were able to go out and play the game. And what I saw is Clemson win the ACC tournament. They were a stacked team just like last year, but they were able to finally put it together and win a championship. And you had Wake Forest, again, star-studded team. They have a great coach. When you look at Bobby Muse and what he's been able to do at Wake Forest, it's Mike Noonan and Bobby Muse, the two Clemson and Wake Forest have really developed some fantastic players who are able to make the transition. So when I watched this year, I saw players take a big step forward. When I look at Kamarni Smith from Clemson, the left winger who really relied just on pace last year, this year was able to combine, play 1-2s, make great runs, a good finisher, but also a provider. I was really impressed with what I saw from Kamarni Smith. Calvin Harris, another winger, standout winger from Wake Forest. I think as a freshman was kind of just trying to find his way and adjust. This year took it upon himself to be the leader, really cutthroat with his runs, great finisher, can beat you on the dribble 1v1.
He's a GA guy too, Generation Adidas. Yes. I was hoping, Charlie, you would guide us through the lay of the land, man. I know there's some players you're excited about. I know you watched them a ton, but like, wasn't the ACC the only league that actually had a league in college soccer this year? When I say it was bizarre, I'm saying it was not like any other season to scout ever. These MLS teams are looking at something and they are not able to go like for like in previous years. They're having to really pick up the pieces and sort of find nuggets from previous years or whatever happened to this year. I mean, it's a strange year to scout college soccer.
It is, because you're basing a lot of the stats, at least, from 2019. So it's a year ago. You don't know if players are progressing. Maybe there were players that, like a Calvin Harris, who was a freshman, really hadn't really been able to identify himself within the team and grow. This would have been that year to showcase, hey, this is the step I took. I feel the confidence. And, you know, there are players who develop at different stages throughout their college career. So you don't know where that next step is or how much they've improved. Maybe it's all been behind closed doors and they're ready to take that step into Major League Soccer. You just don't know. So there are a lot of unknowns, and that comes down to how serious are the scouts within each organization. Are they doing their work? Are they making the contacts? Are they talking to coaches? Are they going to watch players? You'll tell by this draft if there are some players who you maybe never heard of who get drafted. It's because scouts actually probably went to watch these players, watch them play behind closed doors, and say, this guy is exactly who we need, and we're going to give him an opportunity, versus the big names in college soccer, because they play at these big programs where you're just taking a chance because, oh, they play at Wake or they play at Clemson, they play in the ACC, we're going to do it, as opposed to, all right, we're going to find a player that maybe not too many people are talking about. So I'm really interested to see how the super draft turns out.
How are you prepping, Doyle? Like, I'm trying to prep right now, and it is not as easy as it has when I've hosted super drafts past.
Yeah, it's tough, and a lot of it goes to what Charlie said. With only one league really playing this year, there are more variables out there. Like, there is going to be somebody called in the top 10 who we just did not expect to be drafted in the top 10. And it's going to be because, as Charlie said, somebody did their scouting on him. Somebody likes this player more than any of the consensus picks, and they're going to, you know, pull the trigger with a high pick. So it's going to be tough. That said, there is a lot of, I mean, we have a lot of film, right? We could watch that film till the end of days, basically. And there are smart people out there, some of them in MLS front offices, some of them, you know, in college programs, or at least around college programs, around the college game, who are happy to talk about who they think are the best picks and what to look for. And one thing to kind of remember is that the consensus picks are usually the consensus picks for a reason. You know, like there are occasional big misses, like Thomas Hilliard Arce a couple years ago, you know, coming from a Stanford program that produces a lot of talent, but they defend in a specific way that just doesn't really translate to MLS. That one was wrong. But if you look at the top of most drafts are pretty solid in MLS history. So I think while it's different than prepping in years past, it's also really, really similar. And the determining factor for most of these kids is not going to be talent. It's going to be fit and opportunity. If you end up with a team like New England or like Orlando or like Minnesota that really values the super draft, you're going to get your chance to play. If you end up with a team maybe closer to the bottom of the first round, that obviously if you have a lower pick, you have less invested in it, it's going to be a lot tougher. So it's, you know, all you kind of have a rubric where you balance all of these things, and using that, you have a decent sense of what at least the first 10 or 15 picks is going to look like.
So one of the things to notice as we go through our mock draft is college soccer has turned very international heavy because a lot of the best prospects now go into academies in the domestic scene. So that's the other part that teams have to weigh is it worth an international roster spot, which are limited. But the one thing I'll say about this year is, don't be surprised if teams rely a lot on, they go out now and recruit for their academy. So a lot of the players they will be high on and pick are guys that they try to get into their academies or have played against at the DA level. And the other is, don't be surprised if your team takes players that are local because they were able to get those guys into trainings, into sessions, PDL, well, now USL League 2 and didn't even exist this year, stuff like that over the last few years. That's what a lot of teams are going to lean on, is the guys that they're more familiar with. So if Dallas takes SMU players and the Ohio teams take Notre Dame players and all those things, don't be shocked because that's where you're going to get that leg up, where you didn't get to watch guys fully this year and have that full experience, is who are you more engaged with? Who do you trust more? Who do you know better?
So we know the GA class: Philip Mayaka, Clemson, Calvin Harris, Wake Forest, Daniel Pereira, Virginia Tech. As I said, it always is that there are additions. There's always negotiations going on. There's always sort of a last second add, and teams understand that these things are happening, are kept apprised, and then it happens and you know that they get added. And GA players, we also know, are more often than not taken at the very highest end because of the cap implications that they have, and also just the age and the talent side. So before we get to your mock draft, and before we get to these GA players, and maybe you could throw them in there if you want as an example, tell me about the pool, Charlie. When you look at this overall pool, where are their strengths? Is this a center back heavy pool? Is this a left back heavy pool? Are there a lot of goalkeepers that you think teams are going to be going out and looking at and saying, hey, they can get into my roster, I can sign them to an MLS contract, or I can stash them and try to bring them up through ESL? What do you see as the strengths of this draft and the overall talent pool?
I would say it's center back heavy. It's definitely a defensive draft, defensive minded draft. That you can look at Henry Kessler and what he was able to do this year with the New England Revolution, and now, you know, with an influx of talent in the from the college level, MLS executives know we don't have to go spend a crazy amount of money to get some of these players to be impact players. In Henry Kessler's case, it was right away. In Daryl Dike's case, it was, you know, halfway through the season. So you can find the right player for your system, and whether it's you can play him right away or it takes some time for him to develop and make an impact, and a player who can deliver on all cases. So I think when you look at this draft, every Major League Soccer team needs a center back. There's not one team that can say, oh, we don't need depth or cover here, or maybe someone to come in right away. In some cases, you look at some of these MLS rosters, they need a center back to play right away because the quality they have is not good enough to win. So I think with that said, there's going to be a number of defenders taken. I think there are some strong goalkeepers as well in this pool, and I wouldn't be surprised if a goalkeeper or two are taken in the first round. And then there are some electric wingers in this pool as well. So, I'm really curious to see out of the first 5 to 10 picks, which direction these MLS executives are going.
Doyle, take us through the GA class, if you might. Mm-hmm. You've talked a lot about Philip Mayaka on this show.
Yeah,
but we haven't touched Calvin Harris as much, and certainly haven't touched Daniel Pereira either.
Yeah, Calvin Harris is. He's almost Jordan Morris-esque in terms of his speed and his willingness to come inside and have a go. And the difference is Harris is a true winger. Jordan Morris had to learn to play that role. He's not as good a finisher, but he is the type of guy who, it's funny because Wake Forest is the most possession-heavy team in college soccer. They play real soccer. Most college teams do not. But Calvin Harris kind of had to learn to be a possession player because he is just devastating in the open field, devastating on the counterattack. So it was very good learning experience, I think, for him to be in that system for a couple of years. As for Mayaka and Danny Pereira, both central midfielders, both guys have played a little bit more in attack in college than I think they will in MLS. Both are going to have to learn to win the ball a little bit better. But both are, I think, going to be very good number eights in this league. And then, like you said, maybe there's going to be a couple more to come.
I have some names here before we get into our mock draft, which I think is like the main event here, because people just want to know who their club has taken, why they're taking them, what the needs are outside of maybe just, hey, best available, which is how most teams should approach this. And I just want to give you an idea for those out there that are like, super draft, probably not going to be anything that I care about. And look, the numbers game is not one that is advantageous for the players over the course of multiple rounds. Like we've seen in the last couple drafts, the third round is littered with passes. I mean, teams are literally passing at that point. That's not to say they don't think there's more talent out there, because they're going and signing players to bring into their preseason camps as well that they've scouted, as you said, Dave, who have a little bit more familiarity to them. But like, let's just go back to 2018. In the second round, there's Danny Musovski, who scored a bunch of goals for LAFC this year. It took a while for him. He played in USL, but it took a while. He got there. That's in just the second round. In the first round, Tristan Blackman is a starter for a team that went to the CCL final. Joe Moutinho, if he would have stayed healthy, would have been left back for one of the best teams in MLS this year. Chris Mueller was taken 6. Mason Toy was 7. Brandon Bye, very good right back in this league, at the very least starting caliber. John Gallagher just got traded for a bunch of allocation money. Like, there is something to be had here. There is big value for teams that take it seriously. Frankie Amaya, number one in 2019. Tejan Buchanan, how many times, Charlie, have we listened to you wax poetic? 9th by the Revs. I mean, Dane St. Clair, starting goalkeeper for Minnesota. Andre Shinashiki. I mean, you can go on and on. I'm not saying that it's critical mass here. I'm saying that if you make the right decision in the right place with the right fit, as Doyle said, there is value in the super draft, and that's what these teams are going to be trying to do on Thursday. They're going to be trying to find that one or two players. They're going to be trying to be the team that we talk about on the show when we say, hey, what an incredible draft that was. They got three players that filled roster holes for them for 5 years. Or, you know, if you go way back, and we talk about Kansas City all the time, they set the tone for basically a decade. Now, do I think those players are out there and that sort of concentration is going to happen for teams? No, that was probably once in a lifetime, but there is huge value here. So let's get to the Doyle and Charlie Mock Draft 2021 presented by Adidas and Continental. All of the sponsorships wrapped up into this singular mock draft. We're going 1 through 10. So 10 picks. You'll go back and forth. And let's just start. Austin FC has the first pick, but we don't know which of you is going to start. Dave, you were assigned some trivia.
I have a trivia question, but the question is who gets to answer the trivia question first? Because as two competitive GMs, these guys want every advantage they can
I think
get.
You asked the question, and then there's a buzz.
Oh, they just shoot it out. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we went through best drafts a lot over the last show. One of the ones we keyed in on was 2004 New England Revolution. They took Clint Dempsey with their first pick. They then had a pick in the third round, and then in the sixth round, they took Andy Dorman, who went on to be a strong player for them. The player they took in the third round did not make his Revolution debut until 8 years later in 2012. Who was this player?
Oh, my.
I'll get it. Hold on. In 2012, you said he made it?
No. Yeah, he made his debut in 2012 for the Revs. 2012.
He was drafted years in 2004. Later.
Ryan Guy.
No. That is a good guess. I can give clues if necessary.
I think we're pretty stumped here. I shouldn't be playing.
The school that he went to is the same school as one of the Generation Adidas class players.
Okay.
Oh, my. So
2004.
They were taking a lot of Wake Forest guys around that.
Yeah. Parker, James Riley.
Not James Riley. That's a good game.
Michael Parkhurst, he was Wake. James Riley.
Similar to Michael Parkhurst, this player made his best run of professional games in Denmark.
I mean, I think I know who it is, but I don't. I wanted to say Marcus Tracy, but Marcus obviously would. That's way later, and he's one. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm gonna get this.
I wanted it to be Marcus because I was like, Dave would go Marcus. That's what in my mind. I wanted it to be Marcus.
Denmark. And he's 2004.
I mean, look, there's a 3 minute clock in the draft. We're gonna hit that just on this stupid trivia question. This is a good question.
I thought Charlie might know them personally. I thought the name might pop at some point for Doyle. So Wake Forest,
I got
alum,
it. Attacker.
Attacker.
Wake Forest attacker. It's Jeremiah White.
Boom.
Woo.
Matt Doyle gets
it. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. The Denmark can't really should have done it. I think that's what put it over the top.
And another American at AJF or whatever it is.
Charlie, a little bit rattled here. You're a little I don't know how you're gonna do. I don't know how you're gonna do.
The first pick of the draft goes to Austin FC and general manager Matt
Doyle. Yes.
I definitely didn't want to start here at second on the second pick.
Oh, too bad. Well, you got a lot on your shoulders as the representative for FC Cincinnati, Charlie.
He does, because the first pick is easy. The second pick is actually genuinely tough. The first pick with number one overall, Austin FC, taking Philip Mayaka, the box-to-box central midfielder from Clemson. Mayaka is a Generation Adidas kid. He's from Kenya. He's played a little bit of everything for Clemson, but I really see him as a long-term number eight in this league. He covers every blade of grass. He has a really good range of passing. He's good receiving the ball in traffic. He might need to toughen up a little bit, might need to play a little bit meaner, but that's okay. A lot of kids need to learn how to do that, and he has the advantage of playing next to Alex Ring. So I honestly think this is a no-brainer for Austin. I've been looking at mock drafts, big boards, talking to people around the league, talking to people in college. I haven't heard a single person say anyone but Philip Mayaka should go number one.
So in that scenario, because I agree with you, but what I found interesting is if they don't take him or Austin doesn't want him, it doesn't make sense that FC Cincinnati would. Do you see a team trading up to get into this spot if Austin, let's say, doesn't want an international central midfielder out of college or something like that?
It's a fair question. I haven't thought about it enough to say. Like, I could see Houston deciding that they want this kid because with the way Houston build, I don't think they're going to spend a lot of money to bring in, international central midfielders, and they do need a high level number eight. So he could make a lot of sense for them. But I do suspect that Austin would want to just sit right here and take a kid who could potentially start at some point in 2021 and maybe by 2022 or 2023. We're talking about a kid who is talented enough to maybe be sold for $5-6 million. He is that level of a player.
If I'm Matt Jordan in Houston, I'm sitting back, I'm calling up Claudio, I'm being like, look, you give me the one pick, I'll give you the three pick. Let's talk about Joe Corona. Just for the banter. Just to see what he says. All right, FC Cincinnati on the clock. Charlie, I see you scribbling, going through your notes. Does FC Cincinnati take with the number two pick of the MLS Super Draft 2021 presented by Adidas?
They're going to go with Josh Bauer, center back from New Hampshire. And
from where?
From New Hampshire.
From the great state of New Hampshire.
You're
the
right.
From the state, New Hampshire.
Granite State. So what happens here is you're looking at their needs, and they don't need an attacker. They do not need another attacker. You have Locadia, you have Kubo, and they're talking about Lucas Podolski. We'll get to that later. So they're looking to bring in another attacker, right? You don't need another attacker. You have a midfielders, Frankie Amaya, Cruz, Harris Madugin. They brought in Ben Mines. You have options there. So I'm not going to throw in a winger either. So center back or goalkeeper. And goalkeeper is also an interesting position because they could go for Matthijs Swanefeld from Virginia Tech, who's also Dutch. And Jaap Stam and having a 6'3" goalkeeper who led the ACC in saves in 2019. Not a bad selection either. So, but I think they're going to go with Josh Bauer. They need a center back. They need help. That's one position they really lack. And this is a strong, tough center back. He leads by example. He's tremendous in the air. Great communication. Good 1v1 defender. He's athletic. I think they're going to go in that direction.
Is he, for you, the top center back? I mean, that's what you're telling me, right? To you, this is the top center back in a center back heavy draft.
He's just all about defense. If you want someone who's just committed to defending and is a team guy, Josh Bauer is your man. He's tough as nails. I watched him play in 2019 against Syracuse on the road. He's the real deal.
You could have made a granite reference. Tough as granite, hard as granite, Charlie. Just in the future, as you're announcing players for whatever it is, the new Goshires, that's just, just a little hint for you as you get that messaging right.
That's to follow on Charlie's point. There isn't an MLS team that exists that doesn't need a domestic center back.
Yeah.
This is a good center back class. There's not a team that can make a bad pick by taking a risk on one of those. Every great team in MLS history has domestic center backs that are under friendly contracts that have helped them build. So it makes sense for Cincinnati. I just have to throw out friend of the show, Mike LaHood, big on Calvin Harris, who's a Wake Forest graduate as well. And wants FC Cincinnati really badly to take him. So just that's
that would be just stupid.
A GA guy is a low roster spend, even though it's an international spot. And FC Cincinnati are bad. There isn't a spot on their team.
Great. But you're not going to select a player who's not even going to really get an opportunity to play.
Yeah, I don't know.
For what reason?
If you look at the way Stam wants to play, I think he wants to play in a 4-3-3, and they really only have one true winger on the team, and that's Barrios. And it's not clear he's an MLS caliber player. Like, it's just not, right? Kubo's not a winger. Locadia has played on the wing, but he's their center forward, and he might not be back. Like, Joe Jau is more of a wing back at this point, has never produced. Ben Mines has been decent in the USL, but he hasn't done much in MLS. So it's just tough. It's like, and I'm not knocking Charlie's pick. I think I would probably go with the center back as well. But, like, Calvin Harris is a legit talent. I think he's probably a better winger than anybody they have on their team. And if you can get a winger from the draft, that means you don't have to go out and spend $3 million to fill that slot.
So. But you also have Pedersen and Haglund and as your starting center
back. Vanderwolf.
And Vanderwolf and Abdul Salam. So you're also having a college kid come in and be your best center back. So
yeah,
unless former St. John's graduate Tim Parker, which we will talk about in a little bit.
Maybe. Houston Dynamo at number three are now on the clock. This is a Matt Doyle pick. What do you got, Doyle?
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing that Charlie did. I'm not going to go for the best player on the board, which is still Calvin Harris. I'm going to go for Nabi Kabagunchi, the center back from UC Davis. He's a lot like Bauer. He's probably not quite as athletic as Bauer is, but he does appear to have MLS level athleticism, maybe a little bit better passer. And the Dynamo, like Cincinnati, need a plug and play center back. They badly need to get this pick correct. I think that they would maybe look at Danny Pereira here, because they also need a high usage number eight who can sort of get on the ball, connect the back line to the front line. But they may think that Joe Corona is the man for that job. Kibagunchi is, he's an American. So that, like, he doesn't take up an international roster spot. And we know that the vast majority of the best center backs in MLS history have been American center backs picked high in the draft. Given that, given Houston's need, given their roster situation, I think they go for whoever they deem to be the best center back left on the board.
If you want to play a fun game, and I played this game the other day as I went through every single Super Draft trying to do the best 11 from Super Draft history, just start naming the best center backs in MLS history, almost to a man, like all the way down the line. You can get like 30, 35 guys that are best 11 international caliber taken in the Super Draft center backs, the vast majority of them obviously American. So this is why teams do this, and we have two center backs in our top three in this mock draft. Fourth overall, DC United, Hernan Losada. I don't know what he knows, this new head coach, Charlie Davies, about the Super Draft pool, but Kevin Payne, I'm sure, will have been scouting. So who's he taking?
Yeah, Dave Casper definitely was.
Oh, Kevin Payne. Wow, I went straight back. Oh, my God. I just blacked out and went back to 1996. Wow. Shout out to Kevin Payne.
Yeah.
whoa, wake up, where am I?
So it's no secret they need a striker, and you look at Ola Kamara, who's struggled mightily. You have Reyna and Sorga. Neither of those guys are real nines. So Edward Kiza and Luther Archimede are the two top picks that they can make for that position. Calvin Harris, still probably the best player available, Kamari Smith, but you have Gressel, you have Ariola, you have Assad, you have Griffin Yao, you have wingers and a number of them. So you bring in someone who's going to score goals, and I think Edward Kiza is a poacher. He's in the box. They need someone who's just going to finish opportunities. They're going to have players who can put the ball in the box. You just need someone who makes great runs, the anticipation is there, and a good finisher. Edward Keyes is a proven finisher in college soccer for every season. I think they're going to go with Edward Keyes from Pitt.
All right, Edward Keyes from Pitt is our fourth pick for DC United. Atlanta's now on the clock. Did that open up an opportunity, Doyle, for Atlanta? Did somebody stay available that you now take?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be tough because Atlanta have they're importing a lot of players. So that does put a bit of a squeeze on their international roster spots. But Calvin Harris on the board at number five, you have to take the best talent available. And that's what he is right here. And he could fit, especially given that, maybe Ezequiel Barco gets sold. And that could open up that left wing slot, which is where Harris would play. And there is the potential for a little bit of playing time available on right wing, on the right wing as well, if Jürgen Damm maybe doesn't fit what Gabriel Heinze wants to do. So I just think, you know, with Atlanta's roster being what it is, they don't have an obvious place that they need to fill. So whoever, you know, whatever the previous four picks are, they're going with best talent available here. And so Calvin Harris it is.
Calvin Harris.
Let me just follow up real quick for you two with, at this point, one of the names we haven't mentioned is Ethan Bartlow out of Washington, who's rumored to be a Generation Adidas center back. How much would that have changed what you've done so far in that? Is he better than the center backs you picked? As a GA center back, would he push into these five picks so far?
Consensus amongst the people I've talked to is that if he does sign a GA deal, he won't drop past number three.
So you're looking at Houston there.
Yeah, most likely Houston.
Okay.
Or Cincy. Cincy. One of the two.
Yeah.
So two or three. And then Josh Bauer is going to be two or three. Both teams are desperate for a center back.
Are there comparisons in MLS that you can give for some of these guys? Like, is that possible? Are there names that jump off the top of your head with a Josh Bauer or any of these three center backs we're talking about? Or is that a little bit too ephemeral for this moment?
For me, if I was going to go with Josh Bauer, I'd say more like a Walker Zimmerman. That would be my comparison with Josh Bauer.
Yeah, I was thinking more Birnbaum, which is a similar player. I don't think he quite has Walker's athleticism or his sort of like YOLO approach to distribution. But like he can do what those guys did and come in and be a really, really good center back for a while. Bartlow's different, man. Bartlow, he takes set pieces. He takes penalties. He passes the hell out of the ball. There aren't a lot of guys like that who come through the draft, maybe kind of like a smaller Matt Hedges. You know, Hedges is just a brilliant distributor, could maybe be that kind of player in MLS.
I mean, if those are players you're talking about building a team around for a decade, all three of them. So that would be pretty good news for anybody who's able to pick them up. Of course, you got to make that career once you get there, but there is some talent here in the Rapids. We know like to build young and they like to go after maybe guys that other teams aren't thinking about. Shinyashiki was a big prospect. He worked out really well for them. At number six here, Charlie, where are you going?
Yeah, probably Kamari Smith is where
I'm going. Probably, here. Dude. You got the pick. It's your pick. Yeah. There's no probably.
We're going with Kamari Smith.
All right, give us a scouting report.
So played primarily as a left winger at Clemson, but also could play as a number nine. I think he makes great runs, hold up play, playing a 1-2. They could use another attacker. Also, they could use a center back for cover. When you look at, I think they're going to play Lalas Abubakar and Trusty. But you could, you know, use some cover there. And goalkeeper also is another position that I don't think they're too strong at. There, Colin Shuttler is another one that stands out to me at UVA. George Galnovach has done a tremendous job, again, of developing talent at Virginia. And so you can't go wrong with that pick either. But we're going to go with Kamari Smith from Clemson.
All right, a little bit of a wing action for the Rapids. It's a little crowded out there for them. But actually, you look at their depth chart. They do have a pretty deep roster right now. How about Real Salt Lake at 7? Elliott Fall still making those decisions for them. Doyle, what are they going with?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Just looking at their depth chart right now, you know, they need some help on the back line. So this is where, you know, if Bartlow gets added to the class, it makes it much easier because it's likely at this point that one of Bauer, Bartlow, or Kibagunchi is available. Now, the way we're doing it, all those guys are off the board, which is tough. Best remaining player is Danny Pereira, but he doesn't really fit an obvious need for this team. Boy, can you tell that I'm stalling?
You mentioned some of those names. So I think Brett Halsey is the other rumored GA contract, who's a right back out of Virginia, which...
No, but no. He... they're saying he's right back, but his long-term position is definitely central midfield. After watching him this year, he's clean on the ball, great awareness. When Virginia was on, it was because of Brett Halsey. He makes himself available, great first touch, good distribution. This is a player who I don't think long-term's future is at right back because of the lack of pace. Like 1v1 defending, that wasn't his strong suit. But his strong suit is coming for the ball, being available, connecting passes. He was box to box. One of those players that I was really impressed with his growth from last year to this year. So I think long-term, we're going to see him as a number eight box to box in Major League Soccer.
Top 10 pick level at that position, you think?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How was that for killing time for you?
Which teams need that player? Which just like a Pereira, Danny Pereira, you look at him, great player, a lot of potential. But if he's not selected one with Austin, you look at the needs of the next teams. It's how many players teams need that number eight to come in and right away and make an impact? Not too many.
Well, Christian Roldan would tell you that you're better off waiting for the right team and the right fit, right? Uh-huh, yeah?
Absolutely.
So, who's at the seventh pick here for El Salt Lake, Doyle?
All that time?
Wait, just knocking seconds off the clock.
Can we say it's RSL, they need everything? Take David Egbo.
Go striker, Luther.
No, they're not going to take it. They're not going to take a striker here. They're going to take Danny Pereira. He's the best player left on the board. And while he doesn't fit an immediate need for them, they're two deeper lying midfielders in Demir Krylock and Everton Louise are both well into their 30s. So he does fit kind of as an heir apparent. If you can go out there and outcompete like Nick Beisler and Portillo and win that job.
Hey man, the cap flexibility alone, I mean, you get a sort of a dice roll here for essentially free on your cap, so that's worth it in a lot of ways too. Portland Timbers, Charlie, at the eighth slot. Where you going?
Easy peasy. So we look at their roster, pretty stacked, and when it comes to attacking talent, midfield talent, you look in the back, they're weak. Left back, they just let go of El Sueño, Jorge Villafana. He's gone. Aiden Stanley. He was at Duke. He's a left back. He plays he's almost like the mold of a Chris Tierney, but probably a little bit more athletic. But good left back, serves in dangerous balls, can get up and down, physical, athletic. They're going to go with him. Sign him up. It's an easy pick for Portland Timbers. They need help at outside back. You could also go for a keeper.
You made your pick, Charlie. You can't hedge it now, dude. Yeah. You took.
Yeah, I'm going. Outside back.
You took Aiden Stanley, easy. Man. So they got a little bit of depth. That's what this draft is about as well. You need those depth spots at outside back and other positions you don't want to go spend big money on. Here you go. Portland Timbers got some. Vancouver Whitecaps. Doyle, is it a little bit more obvious on this one than was Real Salt Lake for you?
It's actually not, because if you look at this team, their roster is actually pretty deep. So they can just go with whatever they perceive to be the best player on the board, almost regardless of position. And at that point, now I'm looking through my depth chart and I'm figuring
Brett Halsey.
Not on the
he
board.
Can play?
Charlie, we can't pick him yet. We cannot. He's not officially signed yet. Gotcha. I think I'm going to go with Josh Drack, the left back from Denver. He's a converted attacker. Now, granted that that makes them three deep at left back at this point, but I'm not sure that Ali Adnan is going to be there throughout the 2021 season. So I think that just being able to take a guy who projects as a player who can get forward and maybe make a difference in attack in this league from a program that has been putting players into MLS. I don't want to say this is a no-brainer, but this is not one that they're going
to
overthink.
If you have to have a left-back DP, you just got to do it. Also, Spike plays left-back. The Kingfisher. I don't know if you guys knew that. The mascot there in Vancouver. Nobody read that? Nobody read that piece? Cool.
We'd be with a callback to his own column.
I'm just, you know, in the great tradition of that you've taught me, Doyle, and maybe more so Kalen, you've always got to be promoting yourself. Enter Miami, the 10th pick, the end of our mock draft here. Charlie, it's all you, man. Put a cap on it.
Rio Gundhope from Georgetown, center back. You look, Miami needs a goalkeeper. That is crystal clear. Luis Robles, he left. You really don't have much. You need a goalkeeper, but you also want to take a valuable pick when you have one. And a center back is also an area where you need to improve your defense. You have Gonzalo Higuain, you have Matuidi, you have Lewis Morgan, you have players who are going to make the difference for you. You need stability in the back. Young up-and-coming center back from Georgetown. That's my pick right there. Athletic, can cover ground, good timing with his tackles. That's Miami's.
All right, we're going to put these out on social and see how close you guys get. How close do you think you will be on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, this thing streams?
For Doyle, I can understand it got hard because with RSL, you just picked a Washington player for the last 5 years because Craig Weibel just always picks from his alma mater. Hence, how you know TFC is going to take a Duke player. It's pretty simple sometimes, but it's gotten more difficult now with some of those guys moving.
Yeah, so what I will say is how he did, like, it's going to be a mess after number one, specifically if Bartlow signs, because like I think he'll probably go number two, and then like our whole mock draft that we just did it goes up in front. But like Mayock is going to be number one. Bauer, Kibinguchi, Kiza, Harris, and Pereira are, I think, something close to guaranteed to be top 10 picks. I would be shocked if any of those guys dropped out of the top 10. Kamari Smith, Aiden Stanley, Real Gund Hope, Josh Drack, a little bit more questionable, but all those guys are first rounders.
Just a matter of when and where. It's all about fit. As you said, you want to get into a situation where you can play.
Fit and opportunity.
Sorry.
Fit and opportunity.
Fit and opportunity. Fit and opportunity. Just repeat after me. Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, the MLS Superdraft 2021 presented by Adidas. You can watch the first round live. We will be streaming it. I'll host it. Doyle and Charlie will be there for the expertise. And then Devin Kerr will have interviews. We'll see reactions from a ton of these players as they get chosen. And then we shall see. We shall see what impact they can make on 2021. So tune in for that one, and we will break it all down and give some grades on Friday as well. That's another program note for you. We will be back on Friday because we'll be busy on Thursday with the MLS Superdraft 2021 presented by Adidas. Okay, I mean, there were like five A1 headlines in this league over the weekend. Since we just ended with Inter-Miami, taking that 10th pick, let's just go straight to Inter-Miami, Beckham United. Chris Henderson hired as the chief soccer officer and sporting director to get things back on track as far as their roster building, recruiting, scouting, everything under the sun goes. Phil Neville is the head coach. And that doesn't surprise a ton of people. Once that name was linked, you know that he has a really strong relationship with Beckham. And from my point of view, the last year, you could sort of sense a growing annoyance and frustration on not just Beckham's part, but a sort of ownership at Inter-Miami with the state of things. And that annoyance and frustration was really borne out when they let go of Diego Alonso and, of course, Paul McDonough as well. And all of a sudden, after year one, you've cleaned house, and now they're bringing in the new reinforcements. I think Chris Henderson is of these two hires, and mostly because, to be honest with you, I don't know that much about Phil Neville, other than the little bits that I picked up from his time with England women's national team. But I know Chris Henderson real well. We know him well on this show, and we know him well from MLS history, both as a player, but now as a really, really good front office guy. He did a lot of the scouting internationally. He did a lot of the strategy alongside Garth in Seattle that got them to where they're at. And you always saw the Twitter pictures of like, oh, what stadium's he at today? But he was all over the world, scouting, identifying.
Northern Argentina.
Like, is this Norway? What club is this?
Let me get on the transfer market to check the roster.
Type. That, to me, is the settling hire. The like, okay, we acknowledge that we got our roster largely wrong. Strategically, personnel-wise, really from top to bottom, we got to figure this thing out and have some stability and somebody that the Moss brothers and Beckham trust. In comes Chris Henderson. And then Phil Neville, I don't know, maybe you have more thoughts on this, Dave. He feels like Beckham's friend, and he feels like a guy who has an incredible career in the game who needed an opportunity just like this one, and now he has it.
Yeah, it feels risky because there's two things going on. One is international coaches have struggled at times coming into MLS and learning the game, and his only experience is at the national team level. So he needs to do two things. He needs to learn the day-to-day of being a club manager, and he needs to learn a league that he never played in, has never lived here, has never really lived. And so it's dangerous from that point of view as a signing for this Inter-Miami team. To your point, Chris Henderson will bring that MLS knowledge, especially in roster building and those pieces over the course of the next few years. And I see this as David Beckham's going to be more involved more as the head of the sporting side, and Chris Henderson underneath him is going to be that MLS brain that you need for two guys in Phil Neville and David Beckham, who haven't been involved in MLS as much over the last few years, and Phil Neville now. So it's dangerous, but at the same time, and we're going to talk about it with DC, MLS is in a weird situation where they sit manager-wise, because for some people, it's a really attractive job. For other people, it doesn't interest them. And so you're pulling from an odd pool of opportunity. I think the biggest thing here is you've got trust. You know the ownership group trusts Phil Neville. I don't know that Diego Alonso ever really had that. So you're hoping now more of a top-down culture shift in what you want to do, who you want to be. And the belief from David Beckham is that Phil Neville will fit into that.
When you said multiple years, that jive with me about Chris Henderson and the roster building side, because this isn't, and you know, look, it's MLS. They could come out and be a playoff team next year, and maybe we wouldn't be that surprised. You know, they have some top tier talent at that level, but it does feel like, given all the changes they made, that this is going to be a multi-year process to get close to the level that they said that they wanted to be at competitively. And from an overall roster standpoint, I'm not talking about, you know, look, Gonzalo Higuain is Gonzalo Higuain. He has the potential to score 25 goals next year. But top to bottom, building that roster in a sustainable way that can be competitive every year and makes a little bit more sense. I mean, that's a big job for Chris Henderson. And you also look at the roster and you think, well, what are the tools and the resources available to him? Is he going to be able to use a DP spot or two? How much TAM does he have? How much of that is spent? How much of that is accounted for based on what they did in year one and some of the moves they made in that second transfer window to try to stabilize things? So any thoughts on that, Doyle, Charlie, or you guys want to just hit DC United and Hernan Losada?
I will just say that Phil Neville's rep coming out of that England women's job was that he wasn't an incredible tactician, but he did a good job of culture building and getting individual players to sort of improve and perform. So given everything that I've heard out of Miami, I don't think this roster is bad. I think this roster has a potential to be pretty good. I heard that the locker room and the culture was broken last year. It was just never settled. It's hard to get that done with any expansion team doing it in the midst of a pandemic. Doubly difficult. So if he can come in and just get the culture right, there doesn't have to be a ton of bells and whistles. You know, make sure that Higuain's getting enough touches. Make sure that Pizarro's in, you know, positions to influence the game. Make sure that Morgan has one sideline, probably the right wing, all to himself. Like, it's not going to take a lot to make this team look functional in attack. Defensively, it's a bigger question, and I think that's where Chris Henderson is going to have to earn his money.
All right. We'll see. Inter Miami, a team that is just trying to figure themselves out here, but that's two big pieces in that process. DC United, we talked about the roster. I feel pretty good about it. Head coach, you're making a transition from Ben Olsen and a decade of that. I don't think that we thought they were going to do this, though. They go to Belgium, Argentine Hernan Losada. He's a young guy. He's been with Beerschot for a while now. He played for them. He was the manager. They went up and down in the Belgian league promotion-wise. They have the third most goals scored in Belgium right now and a -4 goal differential, with the second most conceded. So this is some chaos ball in the best way. He definitely did the "we want to play attacking vertical soccer" in his press conference, which, you know, that's like bingo. Every single new coach says that. But this feels, and from the outside looking in, because I don't know that much about Hernan Losada, but it feels like more of an ambitious outside-the-box hire from DC United than I expected.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's an exciting hire for them. This is a guy that, from everything I've seen and heard, people in Belgium are upset that he's left. Like, he brought a lot of energy to the league. They enjoyed watching his teams play, and he probably had reached the limit with Beerschot and what they could accomplish. So he was looking for his next move. He speaks four languages. He's lived in a couple different countries, so he's learned the game in a few different ways. Someone will mention Bielsa, and then everyone has to run and hit the button as fast as possible, because if you connect someone to Bielsa, you have to hire them immediately. But that's the school he comes from, as you said. And I think there's a lot of ways to look at this. One is, it's exciting for this franchise, I think, to step outside of what they've always done and bring someone in from overseas who has different soccer ideas, who's going to try and push the pace of play and be entertaining. The other part is, from an immediate point of view, it really seems to fit the talent on the team. He wants to play a 3-5-2. You don't think so, Doyle?
They have one forward. They have a million wingers.
For sure. But Edson Flores as a second forward playing inside is not crazy to think that's where he's most comfortable. They have two basically DP level right wingers. They can't play at the same time. Throw them as at wing backs. I think it fits their center back build even better.
You're going to play what center back build?
I think Pines got his best in a back three. We saw that. And Birnbaum struggled this year in a two. And Briant's not an elite center back. So you put those three together, and they're all better as
That's
players.
That's their entire depth chart at center back. That's sure. it. And That's only, why. And only one of those guys.
Draft the
and only
back.
One of those guys is like an MLS caliber starter at this point.
I don't think that.
You think Donovan Pines is an MLS
he
caliber
played starter? In the back his rookie year. He was fantastic for them over the course of 10, 15 games. So okay. I think he can be that for them this year. They've got options in central midfield. So I think it fits the talent. They need a center forward. They need a center forward anyway, Doyle. There's no formation you can play in which Ola Kamara scores two goals and you're good. Right?
No, Ola Kamara disappointed last year, but I think that was more down to the midfield being an absolute train wreck last season. And that was, to me, that was because they played everybody out of position for most of the season and they never got the guy any service. And so now look, Hernan Losada could be a very, very good coach in this league. As David said, he was, created a lot of excitement in Belgium. There are a lot of people who are disappointed that he is gone and that he is here. And I think DC should be happy. But the weird thing about this hire is that DC's roster is geared, and that includes their high profile and high upside academy kids. It's more geared towards a 4-2-3-1. And he did not play a 4-2-3-1. He played a 3-5-2. And you were talking about like Areola and Gressel, who both can play wing backs. I would argue it's probably both of their best spot, but you're going to play one of them inverted as a wing back. Like it's weird. Like it is a good hire.
No, that's where Yamil Assad plays right. Left wing back, baby. It's all happening.
It creates buzz and it's interesting. But it's a weird hire given the composition of that roster.
Do you like this hire, Charlie?
Completely disagree.
I like this. Now we have a little bit of a varying take on this to explore throughout the year as the results come good. Charlie, your thoughts?
I do like this hire. I like this hire because it's different. It's outside the box. And for DC United, they want to go in a different direction with a coach who has a different philosophy than what they've had. Ben Olsen is as great as a person he is, you know, and as a competitor, you know, probably one of the best competitors that I've ever played with. You need a coach who's dialed into different tactics and man management. And Ben Olsen, that wasn't Ben Olsen's strength. Ben Olsen's strength was, we're going to go out there and fight, fight, fight. And you're like, okay, everyone goes out and fight, fight, fights. Like, what's our tactical plan? How are we trying to play? Where are our strengths and weaknesses? What do you want from us? You didn't get that from Ben Olsen. You're hoping that's what you're going to get with this hire. And so I like it. I think that they're going to go out and try and have a style, implement a style. They're going to stick to it. They're going to try and play to their player strengths. Edison Flores is the one player you need to get going. If you spent that much money, you're bringing in a coach who you think is going to get him to play at his potential. You're going to get Julian Gressel to play at his potential. Those were two players who didn't really get much out of last year. I mean, there were times that Julian Gressel looked good, but not many. Ola Kamara, another player who touched the ball maybe five times a match. You need to get more out of him. And that's supposed to be your star striker. And then you have young players like Moses Nyman and Griffin Yao. Can you get them to play at a next level? Can you see Moses Nyman improving? Because he did show a little bit for being such a young player that he can play at this level. And his potential is high. So I like this. A coach going to come in with a new identity, try and get the most out of his players and see how far this DC United team can go.
Who has more points in 2021? Inter Miami or DC United?
DC United.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to go DC United as well.
We have two on DC United, Doyle.
Yeah, I'll go in the other direction. Inter Miami.
I'll go Inter Miami too. All right, we'll see what happens. Jordan Morris on loan to Swansea City. Normally we would lead the show. With a rumor of this magnitude that's feeling like it's turning into a report, that's feeling like probably that's going to be what happens. Swansea City's in the championship. They're second in the championship right now, 4 points back of the leaders, and I think 4 points ahead of third. Jordan Morris talked about after that MLS Cup and during that process of like how he would think about Europe, and that ambition still existed for him. He's 26. He's had a great run with the U.S. national team, obviously a great run with the Sounders. This was probably the time, if he was going to do this, to test himself, to see how it goes, to maybe flip this either into a different move or go to the Premier League with Swansea City if all works out. There were rumors that Fiorentina, Wolfsburg, and Bayer Leverkusen were also reportedly interested. Doyle, Swansea City and Jordan Morris, a lot of people out there, you know, because it's the championship, because, you know, we have these different expectations sometimes for our players, are sort of like, huh, are you, huh? Or does this make sense to you, assuming that it does happen?
No, this makes a ton of sense. This is a high-level championship team that are, I think, pretty strong favorites to win promotion. And being in that situation is way more appealing than being in a bottom half of the table EPL team that's just trying to survive, playing boom ball, defending deep, not playing actual soccer. So I think that going to a team that's trying to get on the ball and is playing aggressively and controlling most games, I think that really fits for Jordan Morris, especially when the upside is okay. They, if he plays well, they get into the Premier League and then they hit the number. There's got to be a transfer fee probably agreed to between all the parties if Jordan goes out and crushes it for them. It's a little interesting tactically because this is another 3-5-2 team. They don't play with wingers. So he will presumably be playing as a second forward, kind of stretching the field, flaring out a little bit. But that's probably still, even though he's been fantastic as a winger, that's probably still his best role, is that second forward, go anywhere, do whatever you want to find and create space type of role. So I think it checks a lot of boxes for Morris. I'm sure the Sounders are of two minds about it, because while it's great for them to potentially, make a lot of money off another homegrown transfer and show that path from the Sounders Academy all the way to the Premier League, it is not just intact, but it is very obvious at this point. He's going to be a really tough player to replace. Even if he's only gone for half a season, he's a really, really tough player to replace. But this is the business that they're in. It's becoming clearer by the year, clearer by the month, really. So it's a decision that you kind of have to make if you're running all but like five teams in the world are selling teams. So it's a decision that once it gets put in your, put on your desk, you kind of have to just make sure the numbers are right. And then you have to make that decision.
Charlie, you've made this decision, where to go, when to go, why to go, when it comes to going to Europe, but then also making moves within that structure. Just from that player perspective, put on your Jordan Morris hat, what do you see in this opportunity?
I'm looking at maximizing my potential. And I've achieved everything I've wanted to within Major League Soccer. I've won an MLS Cup. I've been in an organization that I grew up supporting. I got to be a part of a team that my dad is the team doctor. So you did all, I think you accomplished everything you had hoped for within Major League Soccer with your hometown club, Seattle Sounders. But inside, we all are curious of just how far we can go. How far can I take my career? I know what all these players that I'm playing with on the national team are doing overseas. Now I'm ready to take that chance. Now I'm ready to take that opportunity and perform at the highest level and test myself against the best. If I want to be on the national team and I want World Cup glory, I want to be a part of a World Cup, I want to be in World Cup qualifiers, I want to be the mainstay in the starting 11 with the national team, then I have to go overseas.
Yep.
And be put in a position where I'm challenged every single day. Not once a week or once a month, every single day, to be the best player that I can be. And so when I look at Swansea and you're looking at options, where can I go? Where's the best situation? You're going into a team that is at the top of the table. So second place in the English Championship, a very difficult league where you have two strikers, you're playing in a two striker system. So that's also appealing for me because I've been playing on the wing with Seattle for a while because of our formation. And now I get to be part of a two striker system, which for him with his pace, he can hold up the ball. He can combine. He's already shown that he can play in his two-striker system when he made his debut with the U.S. men's national team, playing with Bobby Wood. And I remember seeing him play against Holland in Germany, looking good, making the dummy runs. I think he's going to thrive in this situation. So Andre Ayew and Jamal Love are the two strikers for Swansea. Jamal has 9 goals, 0 assists. Andre Ayew has 8 goals, 2 assists. Now, Andre Ayew can also play as a number 10 or withdrawn. So you have the ability to play up top now with Jamal and Andre Ayew underneath you. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities for Jordan Morris to play from the beginning. And that's the only reason you're also going to entertain this is if you have probably heard from the head coach or the sporting director that you're expected to play. And you're going to be given an opportunity. Now, nothing is guaranteed as far as you're going to play every game the rest of the season, but you're going to be given the opportunity. You're going to be guaranteed an opportunity to go out there and thrive. And I think with his skill set and his belief and where the team is, it's a perfect marriage. And you're willing to take an opportunity and a risk to go on loan to a Swansea City with the chance of promotion into the English Premier League, which is the goal, to be playing in the best league in the world every week.
He's not playing in La Liga.
Stop it. So this is a perfect opportunity for Jordan Morris as well as Seattle to say, hey, you developed here. We're going to send you off. You helped us win some MLS Cups, and we wish you the best.
I think this is a no-lose situation for Seattle. This works out perfectly. He plays well. You sell him for a big number. He plays poorly. He's back before the playoffs start, and it's Seattle. That's kind of all they care about. There's a third weird window where he plays well, and then like a Landon Donovan thing realizes that he still wants to be in Seattle. They also win that one too. So to me, this is a no-loss situation for Seattle. He's hard to replace. They probably, if they think he's going to leave full-time, will try and do it early. If they don't, then you kind of have to start to try and work the numbers through the year. They basically have no wingers right now. And his contract was fairly friendly, although now off that homegrown deal, less friendly than it was. But I think for Seattle, this makes all the sense in the world of doing it this way.
It makes sense for Jordan, too, and then no risk side. He can always come back to Seattle. But you look at like the opportunity to be with an ambitious championship club, even if, let's say, Swansea comes up just short and Jordan Morris plays really well. And just because of the insanity.
If Swansea doesn't get promoted and plays well, he will be in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, even, you know, the insanity of the championship. Let's just say it happens. It happens all the time. You're expected to go, doesn't. It beats you down. It's 48 games of just insanity. Yeah, Rian Brewster was there on loan last year from Liverpool when he got sold to Sheffield United for $25 million. Now, it's a different player. It's a different situation. But you know that EPL clubs are scouting. You know that you are in the shop window. You know that every performance that you have is being broken down. I hope this works out incredibly well for Jordan Morris.
Just I hope that watch another league. I got to follow another thing now.
I mean, my foot mob like starred teams is so long. It's just every weekend I'm waking up in the morning like, all right, who's playing? What were the results? Who's in the lineup? Here's another one for you. Swansea City and Jordan Morris.
And obviously, I'm like Ben Bear, who's just big Champo guys anyway. This is just fits in. But
Dream move.
Yeah, I'm not naturally a Champo guy.
Let us know what you think, Seattle Sounders fans, how they'll replace him, what they'll do if he's gone long-term or short-term, 401-206-0 MLS Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Some quick hits on random moves around the league before we get to the mailbag and get out of here. LAFC signed a new right back, Korean Kim Moon-hwan. He's an international. He's not got a ton of caps, sort of in his mid-20s. He seems excited. LAFC seemed excited about that. Probably tells you maybe what they think about that center back position, maybe Tristan Blackman pushing inside. Certainly the Andy Nahar attempt did not work out for either party in that sense. LA Galaxy signed Jonathan Bond. Hasn't played a ton, has a U.S. passport, so they won't have to use that international spot. But a goalkeeper, he needs an opportunity. He goes to LAFC. We'll see if he gets the opportunity there. The Dynamo went and got Maxi Arruti. They also signed Tyler Pascher from Indy 11. And Montreal going the other way got Kiki Struna. This was a very middle table back and forth. From these two sides. If you have thoughts, you know, just chime in. Let me know.
I think Rudy Camacho last year, who went in the other direction? I don't even know.
No, it wasn't. Was it Rudy? I don't think it was Rudy. No, it was Cabrera. It was Victor Cabrera. So just, you know, move him around in that order. FC Dallas went out and signed a left winger from Venezuela on loan, Freddy Vargas from Deportivo Lara. We'll see if that works out for
a
them.
Lot of They've buzz around him, though. Big chance creator, scored some absurd goals, 21 years old. Again, it seems like Dallas has no wing depth coming into the year, so they're starting to load up. And they have the option to buy in December. He just signed a two-year deal.
Franco Servi, Benfica, winger. Maybe to NYCFC for $10 million? TBD? Don't know. Argentine? We'll see.
Rumor had been Orlando with him, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, so he was rumored to Orlando a week or two ago, plus other MLS teams, and now it seems like NYCFC.
Somebody's got a good agent. Andres Reyes, it is done. He was at the Inter Miami last year. Red Bull's making it official from Atletico Nacional. They're bringing in the young center back, which then makes sense. Ivis Glarsep reporting that the Red Bulls are listening to offers for Tim Parker, which I feel like every window now that is reported that they're listening to offers for Tim Parker. I mean, it's been like three straight windows, I think, at this point with this. Is this finally the window?
It probably is, because everything I've heard is that the Red Bulls are open for business. Like there is no player on that roster other than probably Caden Clark who is safe, which is fine. You have a new, you know, you have a new manager coming in. You have a sporting director who is kind of like still settling into the job a little bit and clearly wants to make moves. So this is to be expected. I don't love the Reyes signing. Granted, last year was a tough year, and he's a young kid, but he did not look like an MLS caliber center back. But you know, the Red Bulls have a longer track record with this sort of thing than I do, so I think probably want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Now, on the flip side for Parker, there isn't an MLS team that it wouldn't make sense to get a starting American center back. He's purely right-footed. I think that's the one thing that stands in the way with a lot of teams. If you already have a guy there, maybe you're not going to bring him in. But FC Cincinnati was the first rumor that came out because, again, they need a player in every single spot. Mm-hmm. But besides that, there is not an MLS team. I think Houston is...
Doesn't he make a lot of sense for San Jose with the way that Almeida likes to play with guys crashing into each other? Like that... No, I mean, that feels like...
His athleticism, his ability to run for 90 minutes.
It makes a lot of sense for the Rebs as well to play on the right side, and Henry Kessler's on the left. That makes sense for me because, you know, Brucerino loves depth. Not a bad option as well.
Interesting.
You see Anders saying Sounders, trade for Tim Parker.
I mean, Anders says Sounders about everything.
That's where Jaimar plays. If he was one thing else. I would say the one that's a weird one that came in my head is if you're Minnesota and you don't know about Ike,
yeah,
it could be a way to give you a little bit of cover. But if Ike's healthy, that's a lot of money. Tim Parker got a really big deal. It's only for 1 year left, I think. But that was the other part, I think, of why he's available for New York, because they gave him a huge deal after his first year when he played well to keep him and to kind of solidify that center back spot. He hasn't played up to that contract. So it's not an easy flyer for 1 year. But if you want cover at that right center back position, it would make sense.
Before the mailbag, Charlie, I just got a tee up here. Lucas Podolski, FC Cincinnati. I mean, he'd be big in the fast casual scene. He'll bring the Euros. He's got the franchises. He's been all over. He's been to Japan. He's been to Turkey. He's been England. I mean, he needs another stop. He needs another place to grow the Lucas Podolski brand. Is Cincinnati that stop?
If you want to pay him absolute peanuts to come, sure. Why not? But he's turning 36 in June. He has scored 5 goals in the past 2 years. So this isn't the Lucas Podolski from Arsenal or from Germany in the World Cups where he had all that success in scoring loads of goals. This is the Lucas Podolski probably playing on one leg. So,
well, to be fair, he was kind of a lot of left leg previous too. So
now he's playing on his right leg. Okay. So, this isn't a signing that brings a lot of hype or attention.
How do we feel? Merritt killed the Falcao rumors to Portland, which was, that was like performance art. So we didn't need to talk about that one, but that would have gone on the list.
This is just offseason agent shenanigans. I'll be shocked if Podolski is in MLS this coming
year. Oh, you don't think Jack Wilshere is close to signing a contract with team named MLS?
I do not. But I do actually believe the Lisandro Lopez one. I don't know if you guys saw that, but there have been reports out of Argentina linking Lisandro Lopez to Atlanta United. Lisandro Lopez basically can't play anymore, but he's Gabriel Heinze's guy.
As a coach or as a player?
Player. And if he's coming over on like a minimum contract as sort of like a locker room leader, I don't have a problem with that type of signing. I really do not. But it's not one that I 100% expect to get done. But that seems to have like more sense in terms of how you build a team, and in terms of the monetary approach than a Jack Wilshere or a Lucas Podolski or a Falcao.
Andrew Wiebe might be available to play center forward for a few MLS teams if Lisandro Lopez getting that contract.
Do we think I'm that good of a locker room guy? I'm not so sure. I think it's going to be like the respect levels are just going to drop through the floor here. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. You know how to get us in the mailbag. Producer Anders has been in the comments, which we do really need to get on the YouTube so you can see his stream of thought and consciousness that we forgot the Producer Anders reminder of the day. We did not forget it. It's just that the Super Draft 2021 presented by Adidas on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, the first round streamed on all the MLS channels, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, Pluto TV, grabbing from everywhere. It just flows right through me.
The Super
That was more important. So here's the Producer Anders reminder of the day. He says it's an exciting time for MLS exports in Europe, none more so than the young Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who scored this past weekend to help AC Milan win again and keep their spot at the top of the table. Zlatan now has 12 goals in 8 league games this season. Really nice to see that MLS was able to revive the young forward's career after teams gave up on him. So I have two things off this. One, there's got to be a word count limit on Producer Anders for his reminder of the day. Two, this is Doyle's shtick, not yours. So let Doyle have that. Let Doyle have that shine. Anders, all right, Anders?
Anders' lifelong dream is to be a Matt Doyle cover band. Congrats, buddy.
I think Anders is pretty excited because rumors that Giuseppe Rossi might go back to Europe and MLS could revive his career as well. And I know Anders is a big Giuseppe Rossi fan.
Huge, huge. Shout out to Thomas, the AC Milan fan, who I'm sure Anders was trolling with that one. Let's see. We have a good tweet here. Ray Dorosco 2 says, LA Galaxy of 2011 against Columbus Crew 2020, neutral venue. How many times did the Galaxy come out on top in 10 games? Basically, which is the better team? Who would you bet on?
It's tough because you can't beat the top of that Galaxy lineup with Landon and Robbie Keane and Beckham in his second to last MLS year. I think probably his best MLS season. That team was really, really good. Juninho, Omar Gonzalez,
Sean Franklin.
But they started Leonardo at center back.
In the final, it was AJ and Omar at center backs.
Are you sure?
I'm looking at it right now, but they did start Adam Chrisman at center forward, which is probably.
Yeah. So like, it's such a different era of MLS. Cause like if you consider it a weak link game, then the Crew are strong favorites. But if you consider it like, okay, we need our stars to make play, you can't bet against Robbie Keane and Landon Donovan in the playoffs. So I think a 10-game series with plenty of rest between the games, like it's probably a coin flip because of those things. Over the course of an MLS regular season, you need 30 guys to win to achieve a high level. I think the modern teams are just so much better than even the great teams from 10 years ago because it's more of a grind. There are fewer. That 2011 Galaxy team went into some games where the talent level difference between them and the team they were playing against was freaking massive. You don't get that. You don't get as much of that in this era of MLS. So I would say, go ahead.
You saw that right in MLS Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, Nagby's gone. Pedro Santos is gone. Guys they bring in.
So in MLS Cup, that Galaxy team in 2011 made one substitution. It was to bring Chris Burch along.
Yeah.
Because everyone else was Berhalter and Hayduk and Karofsky, who were 39, 40 years old at that point, and guys that they weren't going to play where for Columbus, as you said, two starters missing, two DPs, and they were still able to win MLS Cup. So depth, I think, is different. This Galaxy team is probably the only one from this 6-7 year span that would even be in this conversation, though. I don't think those Houston teams.
I think RSL would.
RSL's fair. I don't think KC would then right after in 2013.
I mean, that team got close, right? Because remember, they were missing Uri Russell in that MLS Cup.
Yeah, but they just don't have forward. They just didn't have the attacking talent that you're looking at nowadays. I would say for spine, strong, but
I don't know. Argue with us, folks. Hit us up. Keep it going. Speaking of Kansas City, Adam, KC Proud. So we're going with next?
Yeah, I got a little bit of love from KC, so I'll take that. Adam from the Cauldron says
No, you didn't get love. You got the opposite of love.
No, that's not true.
Oh.
I feel very conflicted in writing this. On the one hand, I agree with Goss, when it comes to the Super Draft. The question wasn't what was the best player to come from the draft, but rather the best pick. The best pick has to be a pick that achieves higher than expected. The pick itself is being judged, not the player. His shout for Altidore was the best of the three. My shout would be 2000 third-round pick Nick Raimondo. Third-round pick goes on to be arguably the greatest goalkeeper in history. He does hate, though, that I hate on Kansas City. Not only does he live in KC, he lives on the Kansas side. Well, I think NYC is a nice city. There's nothing quite like KC. So I'll say this,
Adam. Okay, but hold on.
Kansas side. It's the Missouri side that I don't touch. Adam, next time, I got you. I'm going to come. I'll bring you bread from Messenger Cafe, best bread in America, and we'll hang out.
Good thing I lived on the Missouri side, I guess. Yeah, look, calling NYC a nice city, I've seen a lot of the feedback here where people are like, oh, NYC, not even. I'm like, come on. I'm sorry. NYC is the best city in the world, okay? It pains me to have left New York City. What? It pains me, all right?
What? I'm not even going to entertain something so silly. I'm really not going to entertain
anything else before we get out of here? Anything else we got that we want to go through?
People saying that I was right about the way I assessed the picks and you guys are wrong. The next one is Matt Beisler, lower pick than Chad Marshall, Omar Gonzalez. A lot of the things you gave credit for to Omar and Chad, they didn't actually do on the teams that picked them. So he says Matt Beisler, a longer-term pick, more successful, the rebrand, all those things for Kansas City.
He wasn't more successful than Omar Gonzalez. Like if you
or Chad Marshall.
Or Chad Marshall. It was a great pick, but he wasn't more successful.
How many trophies did Beisler win versus Marshall for Columbus?
No,
three.
Yeah, Marshall had a cup. He had two shields.
If you want to do like pure rings culture, that's fair, but I thought you're not about that. I mean, you're Knicks.
Back-to-back games.
But if you take it off rings culture, Beisler did have more of a time with the national team. But then again,
no, for sure. But
I don't think that would be in the argument of who did more for the club.
The argument, though, for Omar, I still think is that not only did he change the club in terms of what they were able to accomplish on the field, but he also won multiple titles. Right, he was the best defender on one of only two inarguable dynasties in MLS history, right? And then the third thing is he got sold for seven figures. Like, he checked every box that you want out of a draft pick.
Okay, let me close you guys on this one, and we are done. Not MLS related. What is the best rivalry in the world of soccer?
I'm having a hard time with this question right now because we don't get rivalries with the pomp and circumstance that we had.
That's rivalry, Weeby. Didn't ask the best game in 2021 or January of 20.
Yeah, but that's what makes rivalries
understood,
special.
Weeby. What's the best rivalry in the world?
I think it's pretty easy.
What?
Real Madrid, Barcelona.
That's what you're going to say. I was just checking.
Yeah. I mean, that's the obvious answer, even though the air has kind of gone out of it over the past 18 months, but that's only in comparison to what it was for the previous 15 years, right?
That has to
be the answer.
Maybe. The only other one that jumps to my mind just based on recent matchups and just, I mean, the history of it is River and Boca. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you go both into that, into culture, into like, those are the sort of rivalries where it's not just your teams, it's who you are. It's outside of soccer. It's what you represent as a person, whether that be, you know, ethically or politically or background or upbringing. Mm-hmm. And it's like a part of your core. It's inextricable to who you are. There's no outside of that. Everything that you do is through that same lens. And that is just, that's so otherworldly to have happen through sports. And that's why we love those games and think they're so special. Hit us up. What do you think they are?
I was a little,
what's the best one?
I thought you were going to give Ali Zamalek a little bit of love. I mean,
there you go.
Aflu also goes in there. It's the heart of soccer and the biggest rivalry, and as Charlie Davies said, big SPL fan, obviously the Old Firm derby.
Well, you know, we have a new one though now, soon to be, it sounds like, Portland, Maine against the New Gashires. I mean, that's that New England beef that you just can't get anywhere else.
Everyone,
welcome back, Charlie.
Double IPAs all pregame, so no one will remember the result.
New England style. Thank you, Charlie, for joining us. Remember, the MLS Super Draft 2021 presented by Adidas on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern. I won't run you through where you can watch it. You should know by now. Just go to MLSsoccer.com. You can figure it out real quickly. I'm hosting Doyle Charlie on the ones and twos. Devin Kerr doing the interviews. We will give you the entire first round. We'll be back to grade it on Friday. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll see you then.